Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show, brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet. Home improvement at true outlet prices of 40 to 60% off.
It's the Top 5 on the Rokan Show. Let's go!
New audio obtained exclusively by Breitbart News. Wow, indicates that as the Iowa caucuses began on Monday night, the campaign called precinct captains, informed them that Dr. Ben Carson was suspending campaigning. Oh, I forgot. This is what number again?
Number 5.
There you go. We're at number 5, counting down. Ben Carson was suspending his campaign. Remember that whole thing was talked about as a dirty trick in Iowa, instructing voters that they should not waste a vote on Ben Carson and vote for Ted Cruz. Now there are audio. There's audio. Voicemails. Kind of hard to hear there, but she says, explain to people in the caucuses that Ben Carson is taking a leave of absence and don't waste a vote on him. The dirty tricks kind of got dirtier when you hear the audio, right? I mean,
the audio is dirty. I mean, it sounded very dirty. You know, it's funny, though. I mean, isn't a vote on Ben Carson a waste anyway? I mean, come on. Like, do you have to, like, tell people don't waste a vote on Ben Carson because he's dropping out? I think it's kind of a waste anyway.
In Iowa, he was polling over 10%, and Cruz no doubt would have taken his votes. His supporters would have kind of swung in his direction. So, I don't know. It's not right. I don't think it's right.
Weren't a lot of Democrats complaining that Martin O'Malley was taking votes away from Bernie Sanders, too? Wasn't that sort of the gist of that whole thing, too? So you've had a couple different candidates who obviously you know aren't going to win, kind of taking votes away.
Yeah, and then by the end of it, he took one. Yeah, because, I mean, O'Malley was nobody by the end of the thing, so the votes definitely went back.
Who am I?
But do you take that step? And how does that look for the son of a preacher?
Well, it's not good. And here's the other thing, though. I mean, the issue to me is everybody's kind of selling Iowa short. Donald Trump's doing the same thing where he's saying there's all this conjecture and stuff's not right. Iowans are pretty smart. They've done this before. They voted. You were there, Anna. I mean, you know how it's just a full political theme there. It's not like they fell for this, I don't think. Come on.
I don't know. You hope not, because it does seem, I mean, look, when it was sort of softened a little bit after it was initially reported, and then those voicemails make it kind of hard to soften. But there you go, and New Hampshire is another state. Let's check in on
number 4.
There it is. It's getting harder and harder to shock people, but Donald Trump is still trying. He's trying, probably without trying, at a rally in Portsmouth, New Hampshire last night. Trump was hitting on a familiar theme when he added a little something extra, a weirdly whispered F-bomb in the middle of a rant that didn't make, well, much sense. Let's listen in.
We're going to bring businesses back. We're going to have businesses. We're going to have businesses that used to be in New Hampshire that are now in Mexico come back to New Hampshire, and you can tell them to go themselves. Ooh. Because they let you down and they left.
Is a candidate allowed to say that? He, of course, is backing off right now. Donald Trump is saying, I never said the word. But we bleeped it right there, and it sounded very much when... Brian, can you give me the thumbs up if you've actually listened to the unbleeped? Okay, yes, we got a thumbs up.
The bleeper says that he bleeped.
The not safe for work version of Trump's comments.
How can I say I didn't say the word? It's right there. Brian heard it.
I wonder, when is this guy just going to pull the plug and pull a Barry Sanders? You know, like, he's popular right now. Before he fades away, does he just drop out? Because I don't even know if he wants to be the president.
Some wonder that.
I don't know. He loves the attention. We all know that. But would you be surprised if, I don't know, after New Hampshire, he's like, eh, I'm going to pull out.
He's still ahead in New Hampshire by a lot. And you wonder if the support starts to fade and he doesn't start looking as good, then maybe there's a reason why he pulls out. But we don't know.
And looking past history, I mean, this has been a time when the front runner has tended to peak, too. So I don't think timing, as far as where we are in the election cycle, is necessarily on his side.
Let's, we're going to go moving on here, checking in at
number 3.
Oh yeah, for any fan of R&B music, it is impossible to think of the 1970s, the early 80s, without recalling the shiny, groovy, exuberant sounds. Earth, Wind & Fire, No man played a greater role in carving out that band's gems than founding member Maurice White, who died yesterday at the age of 74. Earth, Wind, and Fire, whose many hits included Shining Star, September, That's the Way of the World, and a cover of the Beatles' Got to Get You in My Life, had a sound that was rooted in R&B, but crossed musical boundaries, attracting an audience that was as diverse racially as the music was stylistically. You guys Earth, Wind, and Fire fans?
A little before my time.
Oh, come on, Sammy.
Sammy, I mean, how old are you?
Yeah, Sammy. Oh, this
18?
Is my ID.
that's what I thought. You act like
16. He's underage. I've been to Earth, Wind, and Fire shows a couple times. My wife loves Earth, Wind, and Fire. Here's the funny thing about those shows. So, Verdeen White is the brother of the founder, Maurice White, who just passed away. Verdeen White is the bass player. And that guy, if you go to a show and mm-hmm. watch what he does on stage for the whole show, sports fans, he runs around the stage and basically chases the band members while he's jamming on his bass. You can't help but dance and just love the guy. And he's a giant, too. He's like 7 feet tall and well-dressed.
And really? So quite a show.
I saw him at Northernly Island. Yes, I'm going to say Northernly Island, that music venue down there, the amphitheater.
Mm-hmm. I love
and
Northern
it was so awesome to just keep an eye on the guy and just watch him just jam around the stage nonstop. Mm-hmm.
They
quit.
Do sing a song, right? Don't they perform sing a song? Anybody? Head nod?
Sure.
Sing a song. Isn't that? It's got to be Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yes, it is. Brian
I'm getting
is
the nod.
Our sonic genius. He knows all these
what
things.
What a time, though. I mean, what a bad time. Glenn Frey, David Bowie, Maurice White.
Some say they come in threes. Let's hope it's done. We've got Maurice White was 74 years old. We're going to continue with the top five at five. We're checking in with...
Number two.
The Spike Lee documentary Michael Jackson's Journey from Motown to Off the Wall, chronicling the making of the King of Pop's 1979 solo album, will debut on Showtime tonight. Richard Roper gave a review on the WGNRadio.com. He talked to us about it, too, live here. Lee explains why he was chosen to head up this particular project.
I did two short films before Michael was alive, and then after Michael passed, I was asked by the record company to do This Is It. And then came Bad 25, and now Off the Wall. Hopefully, God willing, I'll get to do Thriller. And that's really the trilogy, the three albums that combine great talents of Quincy Jones and Michael Joseph Jackson.
Boy, I'd love to see that. He explains that, ironically, Michael's anger over the perceived Grammy snub of Off the Wall led to the creation of his masterpiece.
It's evident. Without Off the Wall, there'd been no Thriller. And it was really his disappointment of not winning as many Grammys as he thought he should, that negativity he felt turned into positive energy and really gave him the impetus for that, like, I'm going to show you. So he came back with a vengeance.
I'm excited to see this. There's so many old clips Richard was telling us that they bring up and show the news coverage of him at the time when he was rising through the business. And, you know, just fascinating life story.
Old school Michael Jackson is amazing. I mean, Off the Wall, to me, is one of his best albums. And it's not just like Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, Rock With You, but Girlfriend's a great song on there. Off the Wall itself, the self-titled song, is great. And the old stuff about Michael Jackson that you kind of forget about.
Yeah.
Because of the way just things ended with him. And it's like some of that old footage of him is just unbelievably so, like, young. And developmental, you know? It's almost like not even the same guy to some degree.
And say what you want about Spike Lee, very polarizing. Some love him, some hate him. I trust him to paint a picture.
I do, too.
And paint an accurate one, too, of Michael Jackson.
That's a great point, Sammy. You really do trust him to take this story seriously and really, an accurate portrayal. You'll feel like you're getting that. And how great would Thriller be to see him document that as well? Looking forward to that. All right, let's check in at
number one.
Ben Stiller, Owen Wilson teaming up again in Zoolander 2, opening next Friday. In the film, Stiller's Zoolander and Wilson's Hansel are pulled into an investigation into the assassinations of celebrities who make Zoolander's signature blue steel face. Can you guys do the blue steel face? Have you ever tried to do that before?
No.
I know this is radio, but a very good one, Scott. The duck face on social media before their deaths. Wilson and Stiller were asked at the London premiere last night whether they feel guilty that the duck face look has become so popular.
Well, no, but we do have our lawyers because there is some copyright infringement on the blue steel look, and just calling it duck face doesn't change the fact that it's blue steel. So anyone using that term, prepare to
we can't really talk
serve
about
with
it.
Papers.
Yeah, we can't talk about it too much because it's in court right now. But there was a look that Derek originated in 98 called foie gras.
Foie gras.
That definitely pertains and relates to that.
The duck face thing did go a little too far. I mean, you can't even look at Instagram without people like doing that duck face thing. And I think it looks goofy sometimes when people like suck in their cheeks too much and it's like, what are they doing?
Never been a fan. Although I'll take a duck face over these new friend videos on Facebook. Have you guys seen the friend videos?
They're ridiculous.
Please, I need more friend videos.
Duck face is great, though, because you have the people that do it on purpose and for the photos and stuff like that. You mentioned, Anna. But then there's people that do accidental duck face and kind of don't even realize it, get snapped in the picture.
Uh-huh.
And they're, frankly, fun to make fun of.
Yeah, I mean, they are. And I love Zoolander,
and
too.
Ducks everywhere are probably pissed. Let's face it. You might have lost our, like, one duck listener on this piece. Do you realize that?
It's very, very possible. I, for one, am looking forward to it. I love it when they do the duck face. It's not always becoming on everyone. I just have to say that.
How long between Zoolander 1 and Zoolander 2? How long has it been?
Gosh, it's been a couple years, hasn't it?
It's been a long time. It feels like 10.
Too long.
Yeah.
Absolutely too long. All right, guys, we've got Jared Payton coming up. Are you guys excited to talk to him? He's in San Francisco. How jealous are you, Sammy?
Very jealous. By the way, the last Zoolander came out in 2001.
It's been that long. 15 years.
2001.
And the first movie did decently well, so it's like, why did you guys wait so long? But it just shows how popular it was because it's right back in the fold.
A $28 million budget, it grossed $61 million.
Boom.
See, you know,
that's
you, Hollywood,
turn I take.
Hollywood is usually so good at coming up with the sequels after a success like that. But maybe these guys, they're so popular. Maybe the actors were tied up or something like that. All right, we're going to talk with Jared Payton. Did anybody see 30 for 30 on ESPN last night, the 85 Bears story?
I did.
Was it emotional? I was watching the debate with Bernie and Hillary, and I was watching the tweets come in while I was, you know, viewing the debate. And it felt like I saw Mike Singletary with the most touching tweet. It really brought me to tears. I mean, literally, so much. That must have been a very moving documentary.
I heard that before they got them all to sit down, they all watched a highlight reel.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of got
maybe
the juices rolling. You know, when you see Walter Payton break off a 50-yard touchdown run as he runs over four teammates and then his teammates are carrying him off the field. You watch that, mm-hmm. and then you're asked a bunch of questions. You get emotional. So they knew what they were doing going in.
And the 30 for 30 guys at ESPN do such a good job of putting that story together. I mean, it's fantastic what they've done.
Well, you would think that there's so little we don't know about the 85 Bears. And we've celebrated them for how long now, right? And we love
forever.
Them. But I mean, there's been so much done and about them that to think that they could come up with something powerful again or something that would move somebody like that. I saw Jarrett Payton tweeting about that as well because, of course, his father, the late, great Walter Payton, was featured in it, and we're going to talk with him. He is in San Francisco. He's covering all the preparations for the big game, for the Super Bowl. We're going to talk with him. And then Tom Skilling about what kind of weekend it's going to be for our Super Bowl parties. That and more coming up after Judy's News in 2 minutes.